This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. They have beautiful book page posters that have passages from some of our favorite fantasy series like The Lord of the Rings and A Song of Ice and Fire and Harry Potter. They even have the Night's Watch vows with the Three-Eyed Crow. They also have Targaryen, Stark, and Baratheon bookmarks. You should really go check them out. It's 4Cats Boutique on Etsy and get yourself some bookmarks and amazing artwork. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight, Lord of the White Castle.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Unwatchful, hater of pike and picker of bones. Friends, today we are into Fire and Blood, Heirs of the Dragon, a question of succession.
Wow, I've got all kinds of questions, Ez, and all of them have to do with succession.
Yeah, there's plenty of them to be asked, I guess, right? Wait, are you talking about the ultimate question, as in, like, who's going to succeed George in writing the rest of the series? Is that where you're going?
Potentially.
by the way, shout out to whoever dropped this song on us. We had a Weston sent us a... I'll put a link in the description for this. You guys can go listen to it. It is a... Someone wrote a freaking song about George finishing the series, and it's actually freaking hilarious. I've never heard it. It's a really good laugh. Sir Weston the Enduring. Appreciate that. Good name, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ez. So, you know, it's... wow, I feel like it's a new era for us, Ez, a little bit. We finished A Clash with Kings.
Yeah.
And, you know, before we dive into A Storm of Swords, we're going to go a little bit into some... Fire and Blood content, right? Because House of the Dragon is coming soon. I expect we get another trailer at some point here in the near future. If definitely we're going to get a Super Bowl trailer, I would have to say.
Oh, that'd be sick. I freaking hope so. Already really stoked by what we're seeing, and it feels, you know, high quality. We know the cast looks good. I'm impressed, and I can't wait. I just want there to be... I'm actually encouraged by, you know, you and I over on Heroes of the Horn we're following Wheel of Time right now. Been pretty Wheel of Time heavy. And to see what they've done with, like, a lot of source material and still keeping the reader guessing and wondering. Like, yes, we have Fire and Blood. We have this massive book here. But you're going to find today, even as we go through... The Old King, The Succession, Council of 101 AC. There's really not a whole lot. Like, you can't... It's an outline. It still is even just an outline. There are one or two paragraphs that describe a batch of time where Daemon went and did this, or this character did this. And so there's just so much that you can play with that I really hope they take all audiences on a trip of some kind. You know what I mean? Like a really, like, dramatic trip. And, you know... Even if they, not that they're going to need, they don't really even need to change anything. It's just get us attached to a character that really isn't even in the books. That's okay. Bring somebody in, do that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, even Game of Thrones created some show only characters. You know, Roz was kind of an interesting character who I think made it, I think season two or into season three is where she dies, right? But she's in the first episode, right? In in Winterfell, and then sort of works for a lot of different sort of blending of characters and moves the story along. Wow. So you can what?
I thought you were gonna say, yeah, she works for a lot of different people. Yeah.
Well,
I,
she does work for a lot of different people.
But, all right. Yeah. No, she catches your attention as well, right? Right off the gate.
I'm sure she caught a lot of other things as well. Yeah. But yeah, you know, so you can do that, especially with the show, The House of the Dragon, because it's like a loose outline.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's what I'm hoping for. Again, some of these minor houses, there's not much of a Stark presence, but now you can build that up if you want to. If you want to have some, I don't know, even a second son or a third son or someone in the Stark family who is down hanging out and getting close to some of these other individuals that's not in the book, like, that's probably a thing. We probably just didn't know about it. They're a minor person. I don't know. Some people are probably raging right now saying, no, if the Starks were there, George would have wrote about it. Like, but they are here.
They're definitely there at the end.
Right. They're definitely there at the end. And to me, I feel like if you want to pull in some of those folks that are Game of Thrones people and their house was House Stark and they freaking loved the Starks, by God, all you got to do is just send some, like a cousin or someone, a Karstark if you want to, whoever, send right. someone from the North that references the Starks.
Also, yeah. What's to say George isn't working on it?
Yeah,
he is working on it. He was hired by HBO to help assist and creating all these new shows.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So he might be working up a couple different things. Maybe he had, you know, the other thing too is when authors write this stuff, he has other notes and things that just don't really get in. And his whole purpose in doing this was just to kind of give a framework that was going to help him in his series that he hasn't finished yet. It's Song of Ice and Fire. This is supposed to be the Gurmerillion, right?
Right.
And yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I hope so. That for me is going to be the most intriguing thing. So when this trailer comes out, we're looking at some of these characters and trying to figure out, like, even the people who assassinate other characters. Like, we know certain characters get killed or assassinated, but like, who did it? How did they pull it off?
Right.
And who are some of the servants that we get attached to along the way that aren't ever mentioned that we're going to be like, oh, that person's really cool. And we see them working, doing their thing, or they're a spy for somebody else.
Right.
They've been there the whole time. And then they,
you know, I have thought about characters, by the way, who are in Game of Thrones. And I know that you're like, well, there's not, like, you know, when you get to Duncan Egg, it's like you could see a young Walder Frey, Bloodraven, right? He's going to be there. He's in the cave later. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about some characters who could appear in House of the Dragon that are in Game of Thrones. That would be a really, really interesting thing to do. Now, in the books, there's book characters who could, like Cold Hands. Not that we're going to go north. I highly doubt we're going to even touch like White Walkers and stuff like that.
Right.
But theoretically, could. He died long ago.
Uh-huh.
We long could ago. See Children of the Forest. They live really long. You never know.
Walking around.
But yeah. The one character who I thought would be a super, like, just mind bender, mm-hmm. right, would be Jaqen H'ghar. Because he's a faceless man. The faceless mm-hmm. men are around for a long time, and they just use faces.
Okay.
Now, do these faces deteriorate over time? Do they constantly have to get new ones? Or do they just, mm-hmm. once you've got it, and then you can use it throughout time? Like, mm-hmm. is it the magic? Like, hey, we took this. Or is it literally like you have a face on the wall and you can only use it for however long before it starts to sort of,
right,
you know, decompose.
Right. Still a bit of a mystery. Yeah. As to how all of that, right. you know, kind of works. That would be
I think crazy. It's because it's never specifically said that there's faceless men used, but there's so many assassinations that I think the possibility of some faceless men assassinations in the Dance of the Dragon definitely exist. You're talking yeah. about extremely wealthy people who are having people assassinate each other.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, definitely seeing that faction involved would be
right.
Worth it, would be cool to see, just to right. even go back.
But you just go get the same actor. I think even just as a cool Easter egg, or even it's a showism, whatever.
That'd be cool.
I think it would be cool. It would definitely be something that if you wanted to like really get people talking on the internet, like, what?
Yeah, all he has to do is be an extra standing. All he has to do is be standing behind someone, right. and you're like,
because then it's kind of cool too for the people who didn't watch Game of Thrones but are watching House of the Dragon to start. And so the people who are watching Game of Thrones are like, oh, somebody's about to die. Right. Because you see it, you're like, oh, some dude's definitely about to die.
Right.
But like, I think it could be cool. There's not really many others. Maybe Quaithe.
Yeah,
in theory.
Yeah.
You know,
we don't have maybe
Melisandre is like stupid, ridiculously even older than we think she is. And we could see red priestesses in general.
Sure. Sure.
So, yeah, there's definitely stuff you could do. And I think they will that will sort of Easter egg tie in prophecy stuff that will, because I mean, that's the whole deal is you want to sort of tie this start tying this stuff together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what would be cool? So there is a character, Lady Misery, Misaria, right? Who is a dancer, who is a paramour for Prince Daemon Targaryen. That would be kind of cool. She becomes his like mistress of whispers to when he's with Queen Rhaenyra. That would she's the gateway into some of that fantastical, magical type of stuff. So people in and around her. That would be cool to see.
Yeah. There's not really many characters who we believe are like 300 to 400 years old, other than the Children of the Forest.
How old is the Ghost of Highheart?
Well, she's like a woods witch during Egg's time. She's probably, even if she's old there, I still don't think she's over like, I mean, I think it seems to me like the oldest person we see is like Maester Aemon and Bloodraven, who's being sort of held together by, the tree. And so Bloodraven would have to be the oldest, but he's around Aemon's age. So, I mean, I don't think anybody that we see is older than 150, with the possible exception of Quaithe, even Melisandre, we don't know, and Jaqen H'ghar.
Yeah.
Because Jaqen H'ghar could be just a guy.
Sure.
Or he could be really, really, really old.
We don't know. We're trying to, you know.
Oh, this is definitely stretching here.
Fine. I mean, we're trying to say, like, what would be that cool tie-in connection? You know, they get the same cat to walk in. Is that, you know, how old is, you know, so I don't know, right?
The God, cat.
I mean, who freaking knows? Is that the same cat? I don't know, man, but it would be interesting to see who. So yeah, I don't know if you guys out there have any thoughts or comments, or if we're missing somebody.
So you'd have to look at somebody who's sort of mystical, you know, something like that. Leaf is definitely alive during House of the Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
As is probably the Night King and all those other White Walkers.
Right. Right. Oh man. Yeah, because you asked me too quick. We'll have to do more digging on that. Even the stretch of just someone.
Well, it's just I think the Faceless Men make some sense just because it's like you have super wealthy people trying to assassinate each other.
Mm-hmm.
They can afford it, and they're trying to kill people, so there's costs.
Right.
So I just think it'd be cool as a cool little Easter egg in one episode. The internet would lose its mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what you want. If you're making a TV show, you want people to lose their mind. You don't even have to explain it. You can just do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, another other tie-in things that you can do, if at some climactic point there's a vision or somebody has a vision of things to come in the future, you can do cameos at that point too. I mean, there's cool things that you could do with a vision into A Song of Ice and Fire. Not that any of this really, more of the Dunk and Egg stuff is where prophecy and things start to leak over into what Jorah. This is all kind of the background to even his prelude, right? Robert's Rebellion and Dunk and Egg and all that stuff that carries over. And there are actually characters that do show up in A Song of Ice and Fire, or we think will show up later. But this is all, the rest of this is just big backstory to House Targaryen. But it'd be cool if there was someone having dragon dreams and there's a little glimpse of an object or a sword. Yeah. So,
because that is one thing I don't think people are really talking about is there will be connections,
right?
Because they're trying to build they're talking a lot of potential shows, they're talking a lot of stuff. I mean, they're building this Westeros verse. This is going to be their sort of Marvel, you know, like cinematic universe,
right? Yeah, continuity. You want things to interconnect. The one, you know, Corlys Velaryon going to all the voyages and stuff. I think that's even in this batch where it's referenced a little bit about what he does, building his new keep and the wealth that he amasses by traveling around. It's just only one or two lines here, but they're thinking about making a whole freaking show out of it. So Ashayi and all that stuff he might go to, and just places he could go, things he discovers. Yeah. Kind of like we get to see like a better version of Euron going out and doing stuff, except for maybe not as shady and not as shifty and murderous and torturous. Right. So,
yeah, good points there. Yeah, I guess that does make it quite a bit better.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's go ahead and dive in. This is going to be part one of this chapter, because the chapter is like, it's pretty long. It's like a 2-hour chapter, I believe, on the audiobook. And that is Heirs of the Dragon, A Question of Succession. So this is really going to be sort of the beginning of what causes the Dance of the Dragons. So the seeds of war are oft planted during times of peace. So has it been in Westeros. The bloody struggle for the Iron Throne, known as the Dance of Dragons, fought from 129 to 131 AC, had its roots half a century earlier, during the longest and most peaceful reign of any of the Conqueror's descendants ever enjoyed, that of Jaehaerys I, Targaryen the Conciliator. The old king and good Queen Alysanne ruled together until her death in 100 AC and produced 13 children. Four of them, two sons and two daughters, grew to maturity, married, and produced children of their own. Never before or since have the Seven Kingdoms been blessed with so many Targaryen princelings. From the loins of the old king and his beloved queen sprang a confusion of claims and claimants that many maesters believe that the Dance of the Dragons or some similar struggle was inevitable. So I will say, as I do have a problem with the text, some of the text we just read.
Okay.
And this is where you can begin to sort of view that this is from the point of a maester. Remember, a maester wrote all of this in sort of, you know, theory, right? Mm-hmm. Never before or since had the Seven Kingdoms been blessed with so many Targaryen princelings. Now, hold on a second. I'm pretty sure that the era after the Dance of the Dragons, the Blackfyre Rebellion era, we have a king, Aegon IV, who legitimizes all of his kids, of which he probably has over 100.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be the time in which there were the most.
Yeah, good call. Good freaking call. You know, when was this written, right? Like, what was
right?
Like, no, yeah, that was another time. That and well, look at that too. When more were born during that time and legitimized how crazy all of it kind of became.
Actually, I believe this is written before that takes place. This does not include Dance of the Dragons. Fire and Blood 1 does not include, or Fire and 1 does not include Blackfyre Rebellion.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, again, I know when you get into A World of Ice and Fire, was just all, they mix in all the maesters and everything, right? But yeah, this is your first volume for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. But so this is going to sort of be the big deal. Is this question of succession?
Yeah, exactly. And so let's just go over real quickly. So we're talking about the old king. Things are set up here with him. And dude, I just found an absolutely massive family tree. Someone has put all of it together. Like this is what
go ahead. Yeah.
The deep cuts here. Let me go ahead and share my screen, and then I'll send you a link to this as well, because it is a lot to track and follow. And this the whole problem that we have, there were so many claimants, right? There's so many claimants that it's hard to know once the old king. Oh my goodness. Wow, there we go. I got like the old Matrix situation showing up there. Can you see this now? This is
yes.
Some of this. Okay. So again, I just found, I'll try to find you, send you a link. I literally, as you were talking, pulled this up, but you can see the old king right here in the center of this, and he's married to good Queen Alysanne, right? Both dying of old age. And you can go down and look and see the sons that they had, all of their other children, some that didn't make it, you know, killed in a horse race, died of an illness, died in.
Sorry, I think I found a better. I think I found a better one.
Yeah, give it to me. Yeah, this one, by the way, is overwhelming, and there is like literally tons and tons of stuff on it, and it's got all sorts of notes. Oh, that's a great one. That's great. Yeah, this is actually the one that we're used to seeing right here, and this is a simplified version. That is so. What Matt has pulled up here is the old king. There we go. And yep, good Queen Alison. And then it's just going to move you right down to Viserys. So yeah, but the point is here, when we start off, Viserys is his grandson, and or let's see, it's actually his son's son. Yeah, son. So his sons, Jaehaerys' sons, they don't live, man. So let me read the part where it talks about that. Let's see. But the stone began to crack in 92 AC when Aemon, Prince of Dragonstone, was slain on Tarth by a Mirish crossbow bolt loosed at the man beside him. The king and queen mourned his loss and the realm with them, but no man was more bereaved than Prince Balon, who went at once to Tarth and avenged his brother by driving them into the sea. On his return to King's Landing, Balon was hailed as a hero by the cheering crowds and embraced by his father, the king, who named him Prince of Dragonstone. So now the younger brother, Balon, has stepped up. And, okay, that's all good and well, right? Until, let's skip on down here, he ends up dying. So he ends up dying. Actually, there was still a kind of a debate at this point as to whether or not it would be him, or would it be, let me go back here. Would it be Aemon's, children, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the idea, is that like, who do you go to? Is it the first son's children, or does it go to the brother next up? And that's kind of the issue that we get into. And then you get into an issue of, is it the female line, or is it going to be the male line that we're going to, kind of give priority to?
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, I mean, we know not to jump too far ahead here, but we know we're going to get to, obviously, the big deal is the Great Council, and we're not going to sort of let women rule, which is something that will tie into a game, the main series, a little bit, because what's going to happen when Daenerys comes over? Are they going to let her rule or not? Is Cersei going to be allowed to rule because of that? Because of that ruling, and that's right. Ultimately where this whole deal is going to go.
Right. Yeah. So let me read this part here too. So this is regards to Rhaenys, who will end up marrying Corlys Velaryon later. But Prince Aemon, so Prince Aemon was next in line after the old king, his eldest son. He dies. Right. Balon, his brother, avenges him, and Balon is immediately named next in line. Instead, so Prince Aemon had a child. His daughter, Rhaenys, who was born in 74 AC, had grown into a clever, capable, and beautiful young woman. In 90 AC, at the age of 16, she had wed the king's admiral and master of ships, Corlys of House Velaryon, Lord of the Tides, known as the Sea Snake after the most famous of his many ships. Moreover, Princess Rhaenys was with child when her father died. So by granting Dragonstone to Prince Balon, King Jaehaerys was not only passing over Rhaenys, but also possibly passing over her unborn son. So there you go. I mean, that's just, I mean, right away, he already does sort of a pre-council of 101 AC and says, no, it's not going to Rhaenys. It's going to go to my younger son.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and I got the picture here in Fire and Blood, which is kind of cool. I do like these sort of hand drawn pictures they have of some of this stuff. Yeah, I mean, you know, the crazy thing is, for starters, Jaehaerys lives too long to where he can't pass it on, and then same sort of thing is going to happen with Viserys. Is he struggles to find a male heir in the first place.
Right, exactly. And when you're so caught up in that, later on, Viserys will do what probably could have been and maybe should have been done here, which is just to pass it on to the next eligible female air, or air in general, regardless of male or female. And I forget what it's called, but there's two different lines of thought here as to how, and it's probably has something to do with England and how the succession and how it's passed down, whether I do. I've looked in at one point, you know, when they were the king or the queen was, you're looking at like the sons and who's next up in line. That stuff is absolutely right. Insane over there as to know who's the duke of this and whatnot. It's,
yeah, you know, that is it is interesting, though, to think about the idea of that. If the king dies, but he has, we'll go outside of princes and princesses just for a second. So if the king dies and his wife is pregnant, could be a son, could be a daughter. Should the entire throne pass to, like, say, his brother, which is where it would if the wife was not pregnant, or should it be held in regency until we can know if the king had a son or not?
Yeah, right. I mean,
I almost feel like it should be held in regency to see, and then if it's a daughter, then it could pass. But if it's a son, then I feel like it should be his, because that would be his technical birthright.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, first and foremost, we should let women rule, but
in sort right, of okay,
rules,
yeah,
if you're, right, yeah, I mean, obviously, yeah, in sort of the rules,
throwing that out, yeah,
right.
And that's where it gets trippy, because when they throw in Rhaenys, and really the clause with her is that she has an unborn child, and like you're saying, hold it in regency until, obviously we have the old king still reigning, but like we don't name someone to Dragonstone yet. Or he's hold. I mean, the other thing is too, to Rhaenys, if you're just waiting on her to have her child, it ends up being a girl, anyways. But her first child. So you could just hold that spot and say to her, "Hey, look, we're just holding it with Baelon until
because
you
have your it's child." Also right. It's all if it had been a son, then it would have been his firstborn's grandson.
Yes, exactly. And that is what Corlys is kind of saying, you know, that we should wait on. So it ends up being Laena Velaryon. So Rhaenys has Laena Velaryon first, and then has Laenor later on. And we know that he will actually have a claim later when it comes down between him and Viserys. But he's like 5 years old, and Viserys is more capable.
Yeah, you would rob my son of his birthright, she told the king with a hand upon her swollen belly. Her husband, Corlys Velaryon, was so wrought that he gave up his admiralty and his place in the small council and took his wife back to Driftmark.
Yep. Yeah, pretty radical. God, man, I'm looking. The person, this family tree that I have in front of me is so detailed that it's overwhelming. But it is great to kind of look at and think, like, okay, so he has his sons, one is killed, then the other one is killed, then it's going to come down to, okay, we've already passed over Rhaenys, the queen who never was, as they call her, or queen who was passed over, and then we even pass over Laena Velaryon, because she clearly was passed over. If her mother's going to be passed over, then she will be as well, but her son Laenor, right, he would then be, let's see, the great grandson of Jaehaerys, and then you have Viserys, who is just a grandson, right? So
right.
That, well, you look, know.
And look here too, by the way, Queen Alicyn saying, you know, good Queen Alicyn, okay, saying a ruler needs a good head and a true heart. You know, she shouldn't, that basically is ruling that Rhaenyra shouldn't be passed over because of her sex, right? Is not essential, right? Yeah. If your grace truly believes that women lack the wit to rule, plainly you have no further need of me. And thus Queen Alicyn departed King's Landing and flew to Dragonstone, where she remained for 2 years.
Right?
Yeah. And then it says they reconcile and come back, but they never reached accord on succession. When she dies in 100 AC at the age of 4 and 60, still insisting that her granddaughter, Rhaenys, and her children had been unfairly cheated of their rights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so she's upset with it, and a big fuss is made. You know, one thing that's interesting, the old king, though, he actually goes back and says that, look, when you go back to Aegon the Conqueror, it was he who ruled and not his sisters necessarily, even though he ruled with his sister wives and they were queens. But when he dies, it doesn't necessarily go to Visenya. It passes down to his son. So yeah, I think the old king was trying to say, that's where I'm getting this from. I'm just trying to continue on here. And then Allison is like, yeah, this is not,
and you know, the other thing necessary. Is it seems like there's no seniority either, because is Aenys older than Maegor?
Yeah, he's the eldest, I think.
Well, because, you know, it's also because, Rhaenyra is older than, no, other way around. Sorry. Than Visenya. Visenya is older than.
Is older. Yeah.
Right. So even Rhaenys. Though it's his older sister, it's about the. There, it's about the. Which boy is older.
Mm hmm.
See, they're just. They just make these rules up as they go.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, yeah, that's also kind of a weird one, right? Aegon has. Going back to the Conqueror. He's got two wives, and he has two different Maegor and Aenys. I mean,
this kinda, is why you need a clear path of succession.
It's kind of weird when you have multiple wives, you know, makes it tough.
Right. And makes one wife is older than the other, but then their kids are flipped. And right. Technically, you know, could be bastards.
Yeah, man.
Look at that. There might be.
The whole thing sprung from a bastard line. Rhaenys was having, you know, intercourse with all sorts of, you know, individuals. So,
right.
Hinted at.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And Queen Allison just doesn't really kind of wants to throw out. I think she wants to simplify things. I don't know if it would make it more confusing or not, because then you even get into, like, some of their children, and you get into the sisters of Balon and Aemon, and or Aemon and Balon, Jaehaerys' right. sons, and then their sisters.
Well, later on they just choose Aeg. They just choose them.
Yeah. Yeah. They hold these councils, right? I mean, that's sort of what, and that is what Jaehaerys ultimately will do later on, is to call a great council, because he's just so, there's so many different people that have a claim. That the best thing to do would be, because let me find,
so this is the, so this isn't even a monarchy anymore.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's like a representative democracy, except you don't get to choose who represents you.
Right. Okay. Let me look at this. So, Jaehaerys, the old king, he has, we're not going to mention the sons that die, but he's got Aegon. Well, I'll mention him. Aegon dies. Daenerys dies. Aemon, his first son, is killed. Balon ends up dying. He does have someone, a Septa, a daughter who's a Septa. She dies. Archmaester Vagon is still alive. That's the Archmaester who will come back. He's called Archmaester Vagon the Dragonless, and that is Jaehaerys' son, kind of a bookish individual, and he's the one who helps his father come up with this idea to call a council. You have Daela, who died in childbirth. You have Sarah, who became a famed Lyseni sex worker, if you will. You have, who else? Is that it? Yeah, the rest of them die, I believe. Some suicide, died in childbirth, and then killed in a horse race. So left over is really just Archmaester Vagon and Sarah. I don't know how you say it. Those are the kind of two leftover children that he has, and neither one of them have legitimate children. So the individuals who were left over, as we said, Rhaenys was a grandchild. Viserys is a grandchild. And then you also have Daemon, but Daemon is the younger brother to Viserys, right? So Viserys comes before Daemon. If you're going to pass over Rhaenyra's, so those are the grandkids. Let's go over just the grandkids right. here. And that's it. As far as what the, I'm seeing on the on my family tree here is Rhaenys is a granddaughter. Viserys is a grandson. Daemon is a grandson. And there was someone else who was an Aegon that just died from Baelon. He was one of his sons who died. But only three grandkids. And it's Rhaenys who's passed over. Viserys, who ultimately is selected as the king. And then his brother, Daemon. Leftover, then, you know, Viserys will have, as you said, Matt, we're going to get to all of this later, which is like he has Rhaenyra, and then he has Alicent and him get married, and they have their whole batch of kids. But Rhaenys just has Laenor. So really, those two big contenders will be Laenor, the great-grandson, and then Viserys, the grandson. So it's a freaking mess. Sorry.
No, it only gets more crazy from here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the problem is that Jaehaerys lives too long. It's the problem is he lives too long, and then, you know, he can't find anybody to give the throne to, and then Jaehaerys steps in, and then he's going to run into the same issue. Who succeeds after me? And then a civil war breaks out.
Right. And actually, let's talk real quick just about, from the book, I'm going to read to you guys, this is what it says in 101 AC. So 101 AC is known as this council, and it starts in the beginning of 101 AC when Prince Baelon complained of that stitch in his side. He was hunting in the Kingswood, find out he's got like a burst belly, he's got some internal issues, and he dies in his bedchamber. He was hand of the king at the time. And Runciter,
yeah.
I think. Yeah, is the one who comes and checks him out and tries to figure out what happened, burst belly. Baelon had sired three sons by his sister, Alyssa, two Viserys, and Daemon still lived. So those are the two sons from Baelon. And then going back to Aemon, we know he has Rhaenys. So this is the setup here. Laenor Velaryon was who Rhaenys put forward. Again, she's pushing him forward, saying, hey, now that Baelon has died, we're going to push him forward. The old king is still the freaking king. Who is going to be next up at Dragonstone? So she's pushing her son, Laenor, forward. Laenor Velaryon was male and could claim descent from Jaehaerys' eldest son, whilst Baelon's boys were descended from the younger. Moreover, King Jaehaerys still had one surviving son, Vagon, who was that archmaester at the Citadel, holder of the ring and rod and mask of yellow gold, and he's known as Vagon the Dragonless. So again, he's the one who comes in and says, all right, Pops, here's what we're doing. We need to call a council. And so, yeah, they call this freaking council, and they hold it at Harrenhal, right? I think.
Does it say?
Yeah. So the High Septon came from Old Town to bless the assembly. Merchants and tradesmen descended upon Harrenhal by the hundreds. Hedge knights, free riders came in hopes of finding, just jobs. Cut purses came seeking coin. Women and young girls came seeking husbands. So they get all of these people involved. It was really, I think, a time where everyone could just come pitch, throw their weight around, if you will. And Harrenhal supposedly was the only keep that could house all of these different lords.
Right, which is why the tourney at Harrenhal happens there later, because it's such a central location, and it's in a big place where everybody can come. It is, I think, also because it's so in the center of Westeros.
Right, exactly. And I should mention another reason this was getting to the point where the king wanted to hold this council was because you had Corlys Velaryon, who is the, he's sort of that master of ships, and he's the admiral of the fleet, and he's amassing his forces in support of his son Laenor. And then you had Daemon, who is fired up, who is getting all of his fellas together to back his brother Viserys. Interesting. It's all this big power grab. And each of them wants a piece of the throne. I mean, Daemon knows that if his brother gets on the throne, he's that much closer, right? That type of thing.
Yes.
So there's some major tension and fighting going on. And it's like, all right, we have to settle this and calm it down. That's what the old king is known for. I mean, a time of peace and gosh, what is the you read it there. The opening line, it was, yeah, the seeds of war are oft planted during times of peace. And again, he has kept things very pacified and he's actually had a great reign and rule, but then it's brewing all of this plotting and scheming, people waiting for him to die and just kind of take over. Reminds you of the phrase a little bit too, with like Walder Frey. And there's some sort of people who speculate that some of the grandsons and great grandsons might be killing one another or trying to knock each other off just to become further up that line and mm-hmm. take over there at the twins. But
yeah. And so this whole council, I mean, tons of people show up and there's all these different claims. You've got one here. Sarah is her name, right? Mm-hmm. Which is King Jaehaerys. Let me see here. Let me pull this up here. Get it on the screen. No fewer than 14 claims were duly examined and considered by the lords assembled. From Essos came three rival competitors, grandsons of King Jaehaerys through his daughter Sarah, each sired by a different father. One was said to be the very image of his grandsire in his youth. Another, a bastard born to the Triarch of Old Volantis, who arrived with bags of gold and a dwarf elephant. Right. And he brings these gifts and things like that. Sarah, her Princess Sarah herself was still alive and well in Volantis and only 34 years of age. Her own claim was clearly superior to those of any of her bastard sons, although she did not choose to press it. She says she has her own kingdom over there. Right. And it's like, what ends up happening over there? It's like Targaryens and Volantis. I mean, can we establish that more and see what goes on right down there? Yeah, there's tons more. There was as well a strapping red-haired man at arms who claimed to be the bastard son of Maegor the Cruel. So he would be kind of old in his age, but could still be, obviously would still be alive, but he would have to be certainly kind of old if
Yeah, interesting that he's coming forward now, right?
Right. He's coming forward now. When is Jaehaerys born? Right, because Jaehaerys is like ridiculously old,
right?
Like going into this, so let's look that up.
Oh, he'd have to be old. You're. I think you're right.
Well, if Jaehaerys is born, let's see. Oh God, let me zoom out on this. Jaehaerys is born in 48. No, his reign is 48 AC. He's born in 34. He dies in 103. So, yeah, I mean, he could be. He would still probably be like 50, 60. Mm-hmm. You know, I suck at math. We all know that. but nonetheless, right? It's by way of proof he brought his mother. So it would have to be like really old, an aged innkeep's daughter who said that she had once been raped by Maegor, although they couldn't believe it. You know, like they just don't, it's hard to prove. The Great Council deliberated for 13 days. The tenuous claim of 9 lesser competitors were considered and discarded. One such, a hedge knight who put himself forward as a natural son of King Jaehaerys himself, was seized and imprisoned when the king exposed him as a liar.
Was he lying?
Who knows?
Was he? I don't know.
Maybe old good King Jaehaerys wasn't as good as we thought.
Yeah, maybe he wasn't. Gosh. Yeah, things get a little weird late in his life, actually. But yeah, I mean, this is earlier on. You know, who knows? Maybe he did get a little frisky. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the main contenders, though. Are really just Viserys and Laenor. And I think it just comes down, they say too, that Laenor, I believe, let me see, I think it said he was like really young. And Viserys was capable. Yeah. Viserys was the old king's grandson, Laenor, his great grandson. Here it is, guys. The principle of, and I don't know how to say this word, promigeniture. Yeah, you guys are probably know what I'm talking about, right?
From a genitor.
Yeah, sure. The principle of proximity. These are the two principles. So like one principle favors Laenor, which is that, you know, being descended from the first son, and then you have proximity, And that was the principle that favored Viserys. So, and also Viserys did ride Balerion at one point, who ended up dying, and he never takes another mount. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, Laenor's claim is generally regarded as the weaker, but the boy's mother and father were such powerful and influential figures that it could not be dismissed entirely. So yeah, then they go into this. Then it goes into a bit of Corlys Velaryon and some of his titles. He was a like this noble house with a storied Velaryon lineage. The Velaryons had come to Westeros even before the Targaryens. So it starts to kind of build up like why it mattered that he was, you know, a son of not only Rhaenys, but then even Corlys Velaryon and the power that that house has. Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I will say, by the way, and I said this when this book came out, I find Fire and Blood itself to be incredibly dry, just as a read. It is quite literally like reading a history book, except that, you know, it's all fictional characters, and they're all fictional characters who appear for like four paragraphs and are supposed to have some level of importance. So a lot of Fire and Blood, and this is why I prefer World of Ice and Fire as a book. I just think it's done better by going through each sort of the king's reign as opposed to these bigger sort of sections here where, you know, you just get little nuggets really, and we're just sort of world building here.
Right. Yeah. And so as it is also kind of weird the way this is written, because right there we start talking about the claimants, and then we spend probably six or seven paragraphs talking about Corlys Velaryon, which I'm going to kind of skip through. We just know the bullet points are he's epic. And from a young age, he learns how to, you know, ships, build ships, master ships, and went on crazy voyages, and he becomes the sea snake and so on, which is awesome. He's revered and respected. And so he's bitterly disappointed when Prince Aemon originally died, and then King Jaehaerys bypasses Aemon's daughter Rhaenys, and then even his unborn child at the time, and goes right to Baelon. So he was already upset then, and wasn't happy. Now, let's see. Lord and Lady Velaryon were eloquent and open-handed in their efforts on behalf of their son. The decision of the Great Council was never truly in doubt. By a lopsided margin, the lords assembled chose Viserys. So again, that's really upsetting for Corlys Velaryon. And that's why I think at the beginning of our show, we're going to see some tension between Viserys, who is chosen. So the council has happened, and Viserys is chosen over Laenor. Laenor is in the show. We're going to see him. And he could have, at that council, he could have been picked. He was one of those leading contenders, but it was always pretty heavily in favor of Viserys. So,
yeah. And I'm going to pull up this. I think this is more of a clear sort of thing. This is just from the wiki here. And there is, of course, some stupid ad that's on here. Sorry about that. Okay. So looking at, go away. Oh God. Ads. Well, oh, whatever. Okay. Okay. So yeah, hold on. Let me do this. You know, this is why you guys can check out the video version. You can see all.
It's a lot of madness.
It is a lot of madness, and some ad that won't go away. Regardless, okay. So here's Jaehaerys and Allison, right? And then here are all of the people, right? Like, it's kind of crazy when you really start to look at it, and you're just like, wow, how many people are there? You got Jocelyn, Baratheon, Aemon, Della, and then, you know, Roderick, Aaron, Baelon, Alyssa, Sarah, like all these people that are married in to this family. And so you begin to see what's going on. So here you have Rhaenys and Corlys Velaryon, and then you have to come down here to Viserys. So this is ultimately what this chapter kind of, and a lot of this goes into, is, you know, Rhaenys, and should she be taken serious, and then, you know, or should it essentially end up being Viserys, who is Jaehaerys' grandson? Now, the interesting thing, though, is that the whole Dance of the Dragons actually centers around Rhaenyra, mm-hmm. who's really just a namesake of Rhaenys, although she, you know, is no connection to Rhaenys, except she will marry a Velaryon. So mm-hmm. that's how like they ended up getting tangled up. The actual line of succession in the Dance of the Dragons is such like a big tangled web, and it just gets all jacked up. And then sort of what ends up being, and to spoil, I guess, you know, it's sort of spoilers to go forward, but I think it's important to actually have this in your mind of where this whole thing ends up, is that the crazy thing is that Viserys and Alicent, right? I mean, we know Viserys is going to die. And that's like the catalyst for setting off the Dance of Dragons, is basically Alicent Hightower is the one who sort of technically rules throughout this whole thing. And then Rhaenyra and Daemon don't actually even end up like ruling. And it's sort of, you know, it's all sort of just their tragic characters.
Right. It's a weird, it's almost like there's two knots. Like the first knot here is this council, which we come out and we say, okay, Viserys, and the dust settles. There's nothing you can do about it. Viserys is king. Corlys has to brood on it. Rhaenys is whatever. Laenor is like, hey, cool. I didn't want to be, you know, I was like five when this whole thing happened. So you move on. But then you're right. Rhaenyra will be, there's almost like a healing, like a band-aid that takes place there, where Rhaenyra then will go over and marry into House Velaryon. So it's healed. The branch is healed. And they then now are connected to the daughter of Viserys and his, at the time, his heir to be. And that's all there is to it. Everything is good until he marries Alicent. Once he marries Alicent Hightower and has more children, there, here we go. Another huge knot is formed. So it is kind of crazy to think that all of this was almost done and avoided, and Rhaenyra could have just been next up, the first kind of queen, and we would have been, it would have been great. We would have rolled with that, and right. Velaryon would have been happy. Corlys would have been happy. His son is there. But no, he had to go have more children. Right. with the Hightowers.
Yeah. And then ultimately, though, I guess I should say, is again, and I think it's important to have some of this information just going into I think it's important to sort of have the end of this in at the beginning, as odd mm-hmm. as that's going to seem, because the whole Dance of the Dragons for me is really about the characters and just what they're willing to do in order to try to get the Iron Throne. Because of the backing of the whole deal is a legitimate claim to who actually rightfully should have it. It's unlike like Robert's Rebellion, which is just, hey, we're overthrowing the king because he's mad, and Rhaegar can go too because he stole Lyanna. And then the Lannisters sort of get into it, and they're just like, we just want to keep power. Whereas this, there's like at least some sort of legitimate arguments behind it over who should have the throne. And so Rhaenyra and Daemon, who will be our sort of main drivers of this whole deal, end up, you know, dying. And then, but then ultimately in a way they sort of win because their son, it goes on to be Aegon the Third, and he is the then rightful ruler. So it makes them that much more tragic, because while they never get the throne themselves, all of the fighting and everything that they do ultimately sort of works. And
yeah.
At least that's the way I've always sort of viewed it.
Oh no, for sure. Yeah. Like it's weird that by the birthing of more of these crazy Hightower, you know, children, the Greens, that the knot is tightened. But then again, what ends up helping Rhaenyra, or I guess if depending on if you're, you know, pro green or pro black here, it doesn't matter. Daemon and Viserys, like again, this is Viserys. It's so crazy to think this is Daemon's son who goes on to become king, and Viserys, his brother's grandson. You know what I mean? That's kind of weird, right? Right. So one of his grandsons, I mean, Viserys has a bunch of children. I mean, he's got Rhaenyra, Aegon, Helaena, and then Aemon. So he's got four, three with Alicent, and then one that he had with Emma Arryn. So and it's Rhaenyra who gets with his brother and has Viserys' grandson. So he, either way, he was going to win, right? Viserys is still, right. You know, right?
Well, yeah, so, exactly.
Kind of funny when you think about it from Viserys' point.
I'm glad I'm not a show writer on this one, because for starters, I think they're not going to have all these characters because they're just too many. And then, as we'll dive deeper into when we do more episodes on Fire and Blood, there's so much of it is also rumor and innuendo, and there's so much hooking up that takes place like on the side, mm-hmm. and like this could actually be this person's kid, and this could actually be this person's kid. So like the whole Dance of Dragons, in order to legitimately try to explain it, and is a daunting task to say the least. But I think it's important to have a lot of that information forward. And again, it is all this information really comes from the World of Ice and Fire book and Fire and Blood. And I think actually what we might do is once we get through this chapter in Fire and Blood, shift back to World of Ice and Fire, because I think I sort of prefer that, because it just sort of covers this king's reign and goes and ultimately just goes through it. But so to go back to where we are in Fire and Blood, we're with Corlys Velaryon and Rhaenys,
right?
And then go ahead.
Because basically it does that big sidestep. It comes to this conclusion about the Council of 101 ACE, and Jaehaerys, the old king, didn't even show up to it. He just hears about it and says, okay, awesome. And it does talk about, because then you have to weave in this whole element of Lord Hightower of Old Town. So of the last years in the reign of King Jaehaerys, little and less need be said. Prince Balon had served his father as Hand of the King as well as Prince of Dragonstone, but after his death, his grace elected to divide those honors. As his new hand, he called upon Sir Otto Hightower. So that's cool. Sir Otto Hightower comes in here, and that's awesome. He brought with him his wife and his children, which is where we get Alicent Hightower, who became this constant companion, fetching his grace's meals. So the old king is right there with Alicent Hightower, and she becomes close. Matt has a great picture up here on the screen too.
Right. Of that, so. And Alicent, of course, is our opposing sort of fact. I guess it depends on which side of the argument you're on. Because I do think when the show comes out, there will be fans of both the blacks and the greens. But, you know, this scene right here, as in this picture that we have in Fire and Blood, there's a lot of speculation.
Yeah, right. I know it's a little bit weird, right? It's at some point in time he starts to, confuse Alicent and thought that she was possibly Sarah or some of his, you know, someone else, right? And yeah, this is a way in which I think the Hightowers become close. There's a reason why Alicent catches the eye of Viserys after Emma Arryn dies. You know, that might be totally different too in the show. They may, like, the Hightowers might be involved in some sort of I know it's implied childbirth and stuff like that in the text, but maybe poison or something else that the Hightowers are plotting to get Viserys more in line with his daughter Alicent. Just a thought, things that they could do, you know.
Well, all I know is that in the year 103 AC, King Jaehaerys I Targaryen dies in his bed as Lady Alicent is reading to him from Septimbarth's Unnatural Histories. Okay, he was basically 96 when he dies. Okay. And then, yeah, the next thing you know is we're gonna get there. Lady Emma of House Arryn herself, you know, she suffers several miscarriages, and then she dies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so this is where Alice, her being around the old king mattered, and her father being the hand, and that family being in a position of power, it will be easy to kind of catch Viserys' eye. Right. It's easy for him to say, OK, he wasn't really interested in anyone at the time. And he's a couple of different quarters are pushed forward as like, hey, consider this person, et cetera. But it's Allison Hightower ultimately who will catch his eye, and he goes on to have children with her. But I mean, and again, that's coming up later. Where once Viserys is in power, he for a long while he actually names his daughter, even after Alicent. He says no, she's before. I think even when Alicent has children, he's still naming Rhaenyra his heir and saying that. Mm-hmm. So, well, I think that's coming up in the you know, next time, but. That's kind of,
I think you can even say there's some questionable things about Viserys' death.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
And guess who's also involved in it? Allison Hightower.
Hightowers, the Hightowers, man. I totally think it's like a takeover. They're definitely coming in here and plotting and scheming. They got to make them sort of sinister or plotting, scheming, or bring them in super innocent and. Awesome, make them likable, and then do what Game of Thrones did, which was give us a character where we're like, oh, they're awesome, and then next thing you know, like, wait, what are they did they kill the king? I thought they were the good, you know, that's what Game of Thrones does. Who's the good guy, who's the bad guy? There are neither. They're all just plotting and scheming. It's the Game of Thrones. It just happens to be the House of the Dragon, Fire and Blood situation version, right, of that.
So. Yeah, absolutely. So Fire and Blood continues. We'll continue on here. And this is where we start to get into King Viserys' sort of rule here. And we might actually, I think it would be best actually to come back ultimately to this to talk, which we've done a Maester study on King Jaehaerys sort of rule. And so also, then we've done Daemon Targaryen as well, but I think sort of just focusing on the line of succession was sort of the more sort of important,
well,
segment from this, which is what we wanted to talk about ultimately.
Yeah, because it is really important too. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to still put a link to this really ridiculous family tree that I found, and I wish I would try to give credit to this because it is important for you to see, you know,
can you go back
who
to it?
Is oh yeah sorry mm-hmm. Yeah, there it is. It just to sort of see from the old king here, I mean, how many people we have, you can see then the grandchildren, you can see the great grandchildren here and so on. And it is kind of, fascinating. And really it's the setup to all of this is why is the sea snake so upset? And then why is it that now things are a bit more chummy between him and Viserys once, Rhaenyra is married to Laenor, right? So, even though what's crazy about that is Rhaenyra is probably not faithful and she has strong bastards, three of them. Don't worry, they all die. It's fine,
right?
Like, you know, and then she has, and then enter Daemon. So it's just it's a craziness. Daemon is smart enough then to ally himself with Corlys. He ends up with Laena for a little bit and so on. So. You know, I mean, they're all trying to stay close to Corlys Velaryon over here. And yeah, man, that's the tension. And so it's the Hightowers. And really, you have the Targaryens kind of in the middle of what would be the Hightower takeover and Corlys Velaryon and House Velaryon trying to do their thing. So, and then you just have the Targaryens trying to make the best out of it and figure it all out. I mean, it's almost easier if Rhaenyra out the gate would have just married her uncle. Then again, they don't have the alliance though of Corlys Velaryon. So there's that, right? I mean, that's tough. Or I think it was even suggested. So Rhaenyra was already married to Laenor, but like she could have done a situation like Aegon marries his sister Helaena. But had they, you know, had Rhaenyra been free to marry, you could have done something where those two marry and it would have been okay. Like he doesn't initially want to be crowned. Aegon II doesn't initially want to be crowned because of his sister, his half sister Rhaenyra. Like what? So you gotta remember they're all related, and it is just a crazy cluster.
It is. Yeah. It is. So yeah, ultimately, and I think we'll come back to Daemon and sort of Viserys' reign. But ultimately where this whole thing is going is we will once again be faced with a question of sort of succession when Viserys dies. And then the council gets brought back up as to sort of put aside Rhaenyra, who will now be the
right.
In, a similar scenario that Rhaenys was.
It's ridiculous that Viserys was the one chosen by the council, right? He's like, he's chosen because he is from the Council of 101 AC. And
he's the only man. Rhaenys, he's really the only legitimate male.
Male, right. Yeah. Targaryen. You actually had Sarah who gave up her claim, and then Rhaenys, who was already passed over prior to. So yeah, he's set up to be that guy. Then he moves forward and says he has his daughter, Rhaenyra, and he says, you know what? Screw what got me here. I'm just naming her my heir. And that was good enough. That also, can the king not just do that? Right. I mean, the old king was trying to be more.
Some kings have just sort of said, this is the way it is, and you're going to deal with it. I mean, when Maegor steps in, he doesn't care about any of those rules.
No, he doesn't.
This is how it is. Then he flies over and kills the High Septon.
Right. Later on, as you said, in the Blackfyre. Yeah, exactly. He does. in the Blackfyre Rebellion, you have like, well, who has the right sword? Well, who looks more dashing? Who was more bookish? You know, who's a bastard? Who's not a bastard? We're all bastards, by God. I mean, but like, this is crazy. It's just nuts, man. So, yeah, it's cool to see how they're going to do it. It'll be cool to see how the show plays up on all of this. I hope it's just like little hidden gems and you got to watch every line that everybody says and the dialogue is rich. And there's plotting and scheming and backstabbing that you don't see coming, that even we don't see coming. That is what I'm hoping for out of the show, is to really play some of this up. Because, I mean, Rhaenyra is cheating on Laenor. That's hinted at. Like, people are cheating on each other left and right and scheming and plotting. It's nuts. It's a freaking nuts time.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Well, I think that's a good place to stop for today. And then this chapter itself might be like a three-parter, just because
it's huge.
It's an enormous chapter, but it shifts around so much. And that's one of the reasons I'm not a super big fan of Fire and Blood. And I just think I prefer the structure of the world and Ice and Fire book more, because this sort of, It just sort of goes around, because it's like the chapter is a question of succession. And then the next thing you know, it's like, well, here's Corlys Velaryon, and we need to spend like
10 pages
talking about just who he is, to just say he's there. And the way it establishes characters, I'm not a fan of Fire and Blood. It's
confusing.
In the way, and I'm a history major. I have a degree in history. It's the structure of this book is not, I don't think it's, I think it could be structured better.
Yeah. Cause the, you know, diverting and moving on, you're just like, oh, here's this character. I need to give you more context on him and explain why he matters and why the decision and the council went this way. There's also the bit later on, like, oh, we should probably explain what happened when Baelor has died at the beginning of all this. And then we come back and we say, oh yeah, by the way, he was Hand of the King. Now let's wrap this up. Let's bring in the Hightowers here and talk about what happened and how we split that up. It's a lot to kind of remember. I'm like, oh, you have to jump back to the beginning of the chapter and remember who that character was. And there's so many freaking names that it is, it's something.
It's also incredibly dry. I mean, it's like Thanksgiving turkey, like 3 days later.
Red wine, washing it down. Yeah,
right. Yeah, just some red wine.
Sitting in front of a wood burning stove. You said
right, and you're just like, I don't even have any mustard. Just like two pieces of bread, some turkey.
Oh,
just like, oh god,
like, that's bad.
It's dry. So anyway, so we will come back to that definitely, and we'll focus on this next segment, which is Viserys' reign, as well as introducing Daemon Targaryen. And again, we've done Maester studies on them before, so if you want to go check that out, you certainly can. I think we have a YouTube video pulled from that that's just directly mm-hmm. who is Daemon Targaryen. Because he is going to be, at least I think, the character I'm most intrigued by in the show.
Sure.
He's going to be played by Matt Smith, who is Doctor Who, he's in The Crown. He's freaking phenomenal. And he's just a survival badass, to say the least. He's an absolute boss, as I say. So with that, we want to thank you. I guess we're not in Game of Thrones anymore. Should we say we want to thank you for Dancing with Dragons? Is that how we close out this new segment we're doing?
We could, they're still kind of playing the Game of Thrones.
They're still playing the Game of Thrones. Yeah. Well, anyway, we want to thank you.
Dragons too.
Right. Well, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be covering part two of Heirs of the Dragon, A Question of Succession from the Fire and Blood book.
Yeah, friends, don't forget to send us a raven if you have thoughts on this, or if you guys find any cool resources or references, I'd love to see them, just family trees or breakdowns. It would be really cool and really helpful just to kind of help folks set up for the House of the Dragon. But with that, if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us that raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.